You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Thursday, April 12th, 2018. I am John B. from GangreneNation.com, and thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe. iTunes and Spotify are your best options to do so. And if you really enjoy the show, please leave us a good review in iTunes. We certainly do appreciate those who have done so, and we appreciate those who will do so. It's Thursday, which means we'll do our mailbag show today. These are questions that have been emailed to me and left in the comment section from gangrenenation.com. We start with a question that was actually emailed to me last week that I did not see until after we recorded the mailbag show. And it was a good question, so I apologize to the loyal listener who sent it and did not get it answered. It is, now that free agency is winding down, do you think the Jets have a shot at a 2019 compensatory draft pick? And compensatory draft picks, if you're not familiar with them, those are picks you get for losing more than you gain in free agency. The NFL has a system. They give out 32 picks a year, and again, it's to teams that lose more than they gain in free agency. And one of the measures is you have to lose more players than you gain. So with that in mind, rather than estimate, I'll just go straight to the source. The website overthecap.com, which is a great salary cap site when it comes to the NFL, it really gives you as much information as you could ever want. They keep a tracker each year to project compensatory picks, and they usually get it exactly right. And what they found is that the Jets lost six free agents. So six free agents that who were on the Jets in 2017 who are eligible, part of the formula for compensatory picks, went elsewhere. However, the Jets signed 12 players who are eligible for the formula. So they lost six, they gained 12. That means they gained much more than they lost. The six guys that they lost that over the cap projects will account for the formula are DeMario Davis, Austin Seferian Jenkins, Chandler Cantazzaro, Julian Stanford, Wesley Johnson, and Coney Ealy. The 12 players the Jets gained are Trumaine Johnson, Avery Williamson, Spencer Long, Teddy Bridgewater, Terrell Pryor, Isaiah Crowell, Kevin Pierre-Louis, Cairo Santos, Travis Swanson, Andre Roberts, Kevin Minter, and Charles Johnson. So the Jets did not just gain more than they lost in free agency. They gained double what they lost. Now, there is a deadline in the season, so if you cut a guy before a certain point in the regular season, he will not count against the formula. So, you know, maybe a guy or two will be cut, but I think the answer is probably going to be no, just because the Jets signed so many guys and they lost, and that was to be expected. I'm a big believer in adding draft picks. I think I've made that clear over the 2 years we've done this show, and I've brought that into focus over the last week or so. I've talked plenty about the need I think teams have to add extra draft picks. So I think if you can get a compensatory pick, if you can strategize in a way that makes it likely you add compensatory picks, add that to your assortment of picks, it's a good thing. But I don't think the Jets were in a position where they were going to be able to add compensatory picks this year. I think that this was a team with holes up and down the roster and as much cap space as any team in the league. So when you're in that situation, you're not going to add compensatory picks. It's not really advisable. Because as much as I love adding compensatory picks, the Jets just had to add players. The Jets had to upgrade their roster in free agency, and they could not gain compensatory picks at the expense of failing to upgrade their roster. They had to sign guys. So whether the Jets signed the right guys or not, that's up in the air. We'll find that out over the course of the coming year. But the Jets are probably not looking at adding a compensatory pick, and I don't think they should have been. I mean, I don't think the Jets could afford to sit out free agency this year for the sake of adding a compensatory pick. Now to the comment section, gangrenenation.com. Plenty of good questions today. Why did the Jets need to like 17 wide receivers? At this rate, Charlie Brown and Fred Flintstone will get a call to play wide receiver. So yeah, the Jets apparently have 17 wide receivers signed on their roster right now. And I mean, hey, as long as Charlie Brown's not kicking, I think we've established Charlie Brown cannot kick. Maybe he's better at a different position. But Yeah, the Jets don't need 17 receivers on this roster, and I would expect that to change. The thing you have to remember is that the players who are on the roster right now are not necessarily the guys who are guaranteed to go to training camp. The Jets can still tweak their roster between now and camp. They can cut guys. They can bring other guys in. So, I mean, there's no way you can bring 17 of your 90 players to camp as wide receivers. I don't think there are enough reps to go around. I doubt you have enough guys with upside to do that. I mean, you have to do a better job filling some of the other positions. I think the Jets are probably intrigued by some of these guys, the value they could potentially add in the return game. And the return game has obviously been a sore spot for this team over the last couple of years. So I think maybe they're looking to invest in that a little bit more. Maybe you keep an extra wide receiver on the 53-man roster once the season starts than you would have otherwise if that guy could be a return specialist. And maybe the Jets have learned the value of a returner, especially a punt returner, over the last couple of years where they've really struggled on special teams and in the return game in particular. But yeah, I struggle to see the wisdom in bringing 17 wide receivers to training camp, and I really don't think they will. I think that you're going to see some juggling at the bottom of this roster. And you have to remember, the draft's going to come around. They're going to be undrafted free agents to bring in, and the Jets may end up deciding that they like an undrafted free agent better than one of these wide receivers. So I would expect to see some guys cut down. I think the Jets, you know, part of it might just be a little insurance for, because you do have some question marks at certain spots between Anderson. You still don't know whether he's facing discipline from the league. Now, you got some good news on the legal front recently when some of the charges he faces were dropped from recent arrests. You have Anunua who, you know, the Jets seem to be suggesting is on track to be ready for training camp, but we'll see. Well, he is coming off a serious injury, so you have to be a little concerned on that front, maybe a little extra insurance. But 17 does seem a bit like overkill to me. And, you know, I'm not sure Charlie Brown or Fred Flintstone will be the next guy that gets the call, but I don't think the Jets need to add anybody else at the position. Attention, cancer patients. If you or a loved one lived, worked, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the 9/11 attacks and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act has been extended, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but open to anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast. Please call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify. Our next question, which is a really interesting one, pertains to Jets history. And the question is, what is the greatest Jet individual season? Was it when Joe Namath threw for 4,000 yards? When Mark Gastineau had 22 sacks? When Darrell Revis had his monster 2009 season? Or some other season? And there were other suggestions that came in. Joe Klecko's 1981 campaign. Freeman McNeil's strike-shortened season. Curtis Martin's 2004 campaign where he led the league in rushing. And these were all great seasons. But I think the answer, and I don't really hesitate to say this, is Joe Namath throwing for 4,000 yards in 1967. And that doesn't sound that impressive today, but you have to consider that the second highest number of yards in the AFL that season was 3,365. So Namath threw for close to 50 yards more per game than the second best guy. That's how far ahead he was of the competition. And I think it's something people fail to realize. In this day and age, people go to these statistical websites, and it's something I hear frequently. They look at Joe Namath's numbers and they compare it to, say, Tom Brady's numbers today or Peyton Manning's numbers from Manning's prime, and they conclude that not only is Joe Namath not a Hall of Famer, I mean, I've heard some people suggest that Joe Namath wasn't even a good quarterback, and that could not be further removed from the truth. I remember, it must have been close to 10 years ago, maybe 8-9 years ago, somebody wrote this piece where they talked about Joe Namath and they compared his passer rating to Rex Grossman, because apparently if you look at their quarterback rating for their careers, there's some similarity there. And that compelled me to actually look into this information, because when I heard that, I was like, Joe Namath and Rex Grossman? That makes no sense. Well, the thing is, you can't compare players in different eras like that because the rules are different. In this day and age, if a cornerback breathes on a receiver, sometimes he'll get a penalty. So it's a lot easier to throw the ball today. It's a lot easier to complete passes. You have to compare Namath to his contemporaries. And, you know, you can't just look at these stats and compare it to what Tom Brady does, because Brady has an easier job. Namath was the only quarterback in a 14-game season to throw for 4,000 yards. So it took until the NFL expanded to 16 games, the 16-game schedule, for another quarterback to throw for 4,000 yards. And in that day, and you know, that again, that day and age, it was tougher to throw the ball because defensive backs could be more physical with receivers. It was just a different era. You know, Namath was a guy who, you listen to some people, and they talk about how Namath isn't a worthy Hall of Famer. Well, he wasn't a worthy Hall of Famer. Again, think about how much better he was than everybody else. In fact, he won two of the equivalents of the MVP award. Compared to his contemporaries, he was a tremendous player. If you take one thing that you ever learned from this podcast, Joe Namath was a great quarterback. He was a worthy Hall of Famer. And the numbers don't look great because of the era he played in. And it's the same ridiculous argument people make when they talk about Tim Tebow and they compare his quarterback rating to John Elway early in Elway's career. Again, Elway played in a different era where it was tougher to throw the ball. It was tougher to put up big numbers. You know, Elway's numbers for his era were good. The same numbers in Tebow's era are not good. Joe Namath was a great quarterback, and I mean, it's really staggering how far ahead he was of the rest of his league in a lot of different areas, not just throwing yards, but just any number of areas. The other thing to remember is that Namath's career was cut short by injuries, and a lot of people think that, who know their stuff when it comes to medicine, think that if Namath was around today with today's medical advances, the stuff that ended his career, the stuff that hampered him, the stuff that slowed him down, that really led to his decline, very minor, very easy to fix if you have today's medicine. So I'd go with Namath. I think that, I mean, the Jets have had some great seasons, Gaston Okleko, Revis, Curtis Martin, plenty of guys you can name there, but I think Namath, 67, throwing for 4,000 yards in an era where it was not easy to throw the football, and just, I mean, lapping the field. Number two, 3,365 yards. And again, you know, you go back to that era, Namath threw completed 52.5% of his passes that year. Today, that's unplayably bad if you complete 52.5% of your passes. In that day and age, that was second in the AFL, second best in the AFL. So you look at the numbers, they may not look like much to write home about today, but back during Namath's day, they were really, really, really impressive. Our next question. Would it be a good idea for the Jets to trade their 2019 first-round pick and their third-round picks for this year and next year for an established pass rusher like Khalil Mack, Von Miller, Vic Beasley, DeMarcus Lawrence? The Jets would have end up spent two first-rounders, three second-rounders, and two third-rounders for one rookie quarterback with high potential and one stud outside linebacker. How's it sound? Well, I think the issue is that I'm not sure any of those guys are available, so I think it's kind of a moot point. I think what you'd probably be more likely to do is trade for one of the higher-end edge rushers in the draft and hope they turn into a Von Miller or somebody like that. And I don't think that would be a good idea because you need a guy who's virtually guaranteed to be that great. And I'm not sure I see that in this class. I mean, there are guys I like. I like Chubb. I like Landry. I like the kid out of Oklahoma. I think there are some quality pass rushers in this draft class, but I'm not sure I see a guy that I think is going to be on that level. And I just don't think, I'm not sure that trade's going to get it done. I don't think you're going to be able to get one of these big time, one of the really cream of the cream pass rushers, one of the top pass rushers in the league. I just don't think that that's going to get, those guys aren't available for the same reason established franchise quarterbacks are available. Their teams understand how valuable they are. And I mean, the other issue you have is you're talking about big payday, which I think they're worth. I wouldn't say that that's a deal breaker, but of course, if you draft a guy, you get him cost controlled for 4 to 5 years. If you trade for an established player, you have to pay him. I mean, Mack, Miller, those guys are worth the money, so I don't think that would be as big of a factor. But I think the more likely scenario would be you'd be trading up to try and land a top-notch pass-rushing prospect in the hope that he would become a player. And I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. I don't think that this class is really good enough. So I'd say no. I'd say in theory, yes, if Denver calls me and says you can have Von Miller for a first round pick and 2/3, yeah, I'd probably do that, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I think that the more likely scenario would be tougher for me to accept. All right, so and then we'll move on to another multi-tiered question. At what point does the rookie quarterback get to start? If the rookie quarterback plays poorly, how few games will he start in 2018? If he doesn't start the entire year, might not the owner fire Maccagnan? So how much rope does Maccagnan have? So lots of questions here. The first question is, at what point does the rookie quarterback get to start? And there are one of two answers to that. It'll either be week one, or it'll be till whoever wins the competition plays himself out of the job. There's a school of thought that Todd Bowles does not like playing rookie quarterbacks, that he's going to lean more towards the veteran. And I think in this situation, I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that. I think a year ago, I may have bought into that a little bit more, but I'm not sure I agree with that. Yes, Josh McCown was the starter last year, but you also have to consider who the alternatives were. You had Bryce Petty, who showed you what he could do at the end of the season, which was not much. So it's kind of tough to blame the Jets for passing on an opportunity to start Petty. But the thing you also have to remember is the Jets gave Christian Hackenberg pretty much every chance he could have to win that job in the preseason. I mean, they gave him most of the first team reps in preseason games. And if he had taken off and run with the job, if he'd gone out and played great, he very well may have been the week one starter last year. I don't think that the Bulls would have hesitated to put him in the lineup. The issue was that it wasn't just that Hackenberg failed to claim the starting job. It's that Hackenberg actually played himself out of the number two job because his performance was so poor. So I actually do think that a rookie quarterback who goes in there is going to have a viable shot at winning the starting job. Now, the question is, if the rookie quarterback plays poorly, how few games will he start in 2018? I think that the rookie quarterback, once he goes in, he's in. I mean, I think he'd have to play unfathomably bad. It would just be to the point where he'd have to be like Hackenberg to be benched. He'd have to be as bad as Hackenberg was in preseason. He'd have to have a stretch like that in the regular season where you just have to put him out of his own misery. You have to sit him down, and you just have to try and get his head straight. I mean, that's the only way I could see him benched once he goes in. Now, when will he go in if he doesn't win the starting job? I think to win the starting job, he'd have to be the best quarterback. If not, McCown or Bridgewater is probably starting. And at that point, either McCown or Bridgewater would have to get hurt or play themselves out of the job. If the team's winning, I don't think McCown or Bridgewater is going out of the lineup. You know, you have to remember, back when Todd Bowles first started, they actually named Geno Smith the starting quarterback that offseason. And then, of course, the incident happened where Geno got punched. Fitzpatrick goes in, and the Jets won games with Fitzpatrick, so they didn't go back to Geno after that. So I think, you know, they'd like the young guy to win the job off the bat. I think they probably would. But if McCown goes in there and wins games, Bridgewater goes in and wins games, they're not going to make a change until the Jets start losing games. Now, as far as if he doesn't start the entire year, might the owner fire Maccagnan? I think it's possible, but I think the guy who would be in more trouble would be Todd Bowles. I think Bowles is finished if the young quarterback does not play well right off the bat, and maybe that's not entirely fair, but at this point, the quarterback the Jets are drafting, third overall, is more important to the franchise than Todd Bowles. It's the reverse of what you had in 2015, where you inherited Geno Smith, who was struggling a little bit, and you know, at that point, Bowles was more important than the young quarterback on the team. Now, 3 years in, heading into year four, the young quarterback's success is more important than Bowles' success. The Jets are committing quite a bit to this young quarterback, so if he can't succeed, the Jets are going to try something else because the Jets need this quarterback to succeed. And even if it's not Bowles' fault, even if it's not Jeremy Bates' fault, they're going to exhaust every option to try and make it work for this guy, and they're going to change it up and bring in a new option. Now, could this be the end of Maccagnan? It could be. I mean, but I think Bowles would be in more trouble. I'd say Bowles is definitely gone if the rookie goes in and struggles off the bat. Maccagnan might be. I think there are dynamics at play that would lead you to question. And I think some of it has to do with, did the team properly surround with the rookie quarterback with the tools he needs to succeed? You know, if it's a situation where the receivers disappoint and the offensive line crumbles, then Maccagnan would be in some trouble, I think. Whereas if you feel like Maccagnan left the young quarterback reasonable tools to succeed, he may get another year. And the question is how much rope does Maccagnan have? I don't think it's a guarantee he's back in 2019, but I also don't think it's a playoffs or bust year. The thing about rookie quarterbacks is if they show even the slightest bit of promise, people tend to be optimistic about them. People tend to hope for the best. So I think if you're asking me point blank, do I think Maccagnan gets 2019? I think the answer is probably yes, but I don't think it's a guarantee. I think the terms I laid out could be the situation where he'd be in trouble. And finally, we have a pretty detailed question. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to answer all of these questions. Who's your value pick, small school stud, local hopeful sleeper pick? If you were a lead scout, who would you identify for each category above and why? And if I was the Jets lead scout, that might be the only way you could have gotten this team to draft worse than it's drafted over the last decade. And I'll be honest with you, I have probably not gone as in-depth as I typically do when it comes to the scouting aspect of things, because I've been so focused on the quarterbacks this year. I've just done a deep dive on the quarterbacks, so I don't really have as great a base of knowledge as I usually have. So if you want to talk value pick, I'll go with a quarterback. I think it is a guy who could fall to round day three. I like Luke Falk as a day three pick. I don't like Luke Falk at the third overall pick. I don't like Luke Falk day one. But I think for where he's slated to go, which I think is probably going to be day three, maybe I'll be surprised he'll go day two, but I think he's a guy with some degree of potential. He's not overwhelmingly physically talented, not a great athlete, doesn't have a big arm, but see him make a lot of complex reads. He typically does the right thing. He knows where to put the ball. I think he's a guy who, with some proper coaching, with some good development, could turn into a decent starting quarterback down the line. I've seen the Kirk Cousins comparison thrown out, where Cousins took a couple years and then turned into a pretty solid quarterback. I could see that working out for Falk. So, I don't have as deep of a knowledge of this year's draft class as I usually do, just because I've been so focused on trying to learn every detail about these quarterbacks, because that's where the Jets are going. But so that would be the way I'd answer that question in terms of value pick. I think if he goes day three, he's a guy worth drafting. And I'm not sure it's going to be the Jets, but I think that would be a guy I'd have my eyes on under certain circumstances. That'll do it for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy this show, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you enjoy it. Have a great Thursday. We'll be back on Friday.